of we the people of the United States in order to form a more perfect union. And the government doesn't purchase it to send it over as like foreign aid to starving people or anything, which would be disgusting. No. The federal government continues to purchase pink slime to feed to children. In school lunch programs around the country. Really, we can say in honesty that the government of the United States, and this is not a this is not some sort of proof that school lunches are a bad idea. This is what happens when fiscally responsible conservatives with deep, long, entrenched relationships with corporate food get their hands on the government. Pink slime. We can now say, and be accurate in saying it, that with your tax dollars, the federal government pays massive corporations to feed dog food scraps to our children. David noting, Bob, there's a reason. Both of my local markets will grind a store cut into burger, thus I have no worry about pink slime. And if you care about what you eat, you would do well to find a grocery store that is not, that still does grind its own hamburger. The little grocery store up the road from me, the butchers there are real butchers, and you can say, you know, when did you grind it? Oh, this morning. Any pink slime in that? Pink, what? No. But if it comes in a roll, or, you know, just remember, because, you know, spring and summer are coming, and we like to go out, and we fire up the grill, and we grill burgers, and we put some weenies on, and don't be buying no pre-processed, pre-pattied hamburger patties, no matter how convenient it appears to be. Don't do it. But see, the saddest and most disgusting part of this is that the children who will be fed the dog food, which it is, the children who will be fed the dog food are the poorest of the poor. That is where we are in 2012 in the United States of America. Granted, the libertarians and the right-wingers and the conservatives and the family values, we don't need to be providing... Remember, okay, I'm sorry, you're sick of Rush Limbaugh, but do you remember when he was advising children to learn how to dumpster dive? Yeah. In 2012, in the United States of America, frequently referred to by the right wing as the most wonderful country in the world, we feed to our poorest children dog food. Dog food flavored with ammonia hydroxide. And the question is, how much traction will this story get? Does this matter enough to generate a... And the thing is, we've got so many things to worry about. I mean, we're out there writing letters about the Keystone XL pipeline, and that bill did get defeated in the Senate today, yay. But there was a bunch of the usual suspect mugwump Democrats voting for it. Blanche Manchin, he voted for it. Mary Landrieu voted for it. Jim Webb of Virginia voted for it. Teaster from Montana voted for it. Jesus Christ. But you guys and I and we have been very busy opposing it. And we've been busy signing petitions trying to preserve the rights of women to have medical control over their own bodies. Meanwhile, children go to school and their midday break consists of a hearty meal of stuff that barely qualifies to go into an Alpo can. Because, you know, right-wingers, they care about the children. Let's see, I ran Marty off. Heard the pink slime story on Hartman. Thank you very much. Going home. Did Hartman get to the point of drawing the bright line between that stuff and dog food? Probably. Hartman's a smart guy. Yeah, David, they do cut a nice bacon there at the local grocers. It's right tasty. It's nice when you can have some vague idea of where your food came from, and it's nicer still when it came not from a lab. I read a story the other day where European food scientists have almost reached the point of being able to make vegetable texture just like meat. The pull quote was, "Now we're working on making it taste like something a human being would want to eat." That's always the rub. Quick trip to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Chris from Nanaimo.
Well, hey, Chris.
Not about crazy this time, just about that meat. Why isn't the headline, because you know, the school food programs are only for the poor kids, not for these parochial schools or anywhere where the elite go. Why isn't the headline, FDA approves, or DEA, or who the hell ever it does, FDA approves dog food for consumption by school children. Poor school children.
Yeah, see, that's the question I'm asking. It's not, I mean, pink slime is kind of headline-y, Soylent Pink is headline-y, but it really is a grabber if you say, breaking, school children being fed dog food.
Yep, but don't think that, you know, this is as bad as it gets. This is actually far superior to what the Japanese are doing to their poor school children. You see, in Japan, they send fleets down to Antarctica to kill whales to bring them up to, and they can't sell to anyone because most people aren't stupid enough to buy it, except in the extreme discount groceries, which are, you know, sold to foreigners and, you know, other poor people. And it's usually mislabeled. And if they can't sell it there, they sell it primarily to the school lunch program all across Japan. So not only have they got reactors going off, they've got these idiots in their government conniving to poison them all, or at least all their children, with heavy metals from the most toxic meat on the planet coming from marine mammals. I mean, they concentrate the stuff that's in the ocean like nothing else. They're vacuum cleaners out there. They just suck it up. And mammals are great at getting this stuff into their tissues, especially their fats. And they've got all kinds of sushi and all kinds of such dishes and so forth. And half of it is made out of the fat of the animal. And that's exactly where all these things concentrate. Given Fukushima, give it 5 years, and the radioactive isotopes will probably have penetrated the southern oceans as well. And these
and the meat will cook itself.
Oh, damn straight, yeah. You get it on there, it glows in the dark, it'll be the next new novo thing. You know how Japanese are with the
That was uncalled for, Chris.
Sorry,
you know how the Japanese are when the
Tim's been pointing me to all kinds of Japanese sites and such, and I've been reading up on. You think you have it bad? You really do. You think, oh my God, what could Bush do next? Cheney is the Antichrist, and then you finally breach the language barrier in some other country's press, and it's like that's way beyond apocalyptic over there. It's just, you know, it's like the teabaggers actually did take over. and people are listening to them as some sort of authority figures of intellectual importance. I mean, just think of that. Just think of the stupidest drooling house helmet wearing teabagger you've ever seen. One of these, you know, the guy who wrote up the sign, "Get a brain, moron." He's now the head of education.
God Almighty.
It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. And we don't know, but we see the robots, we see the neon, and we don't see, oh, yeah. And they hire Yakuza to pick up people off the street, literally abduct them to work in their nuclear power plant. And these guys come out. They're hot as all get out. You can put a Geiger counter up to it and melt the damn thing. Or, pardon me, up to the person and melt it. They got radiation burns all over them. They're suffering from radiation sickness. But no nuclear authority in the country will admit to ever having hired him. So apparently he just acquires radiation naturally. We should study him for that cold fusion technology we keep looking for. And that's not all. Oh, my God. Japan is just, you know, the low-hanging fruit. You move off to the African subcontinent. Oh, my God. You move over to Russia, and it's like, honestly, America is the test bed for all the bad ideas in the universe, it seems.
Well, no, actually, we are the petri dish. Because it grows, it leaps out of the petri dish, and then the rest of the world catches it, Chris.
Well, I mean, Russia has these Diebold machines. We've got them up here in our municipal elections. We've got fine provincial and federal elections, but our municipal elections are a complete mess. Our voting,
because you may cast your vote, and the next thing you know, you've won Space Invaders.
Well, what I'm worried about is that I'm an applied computer scientist. I have technical expertise. I hack. I geek. I do all these things, and I'm running for election, and I win. How can they not prima facie evidence charge me with election fraud or, you know, something like that? Because obviously I stole it. I couldn't possibly be that popular. I mean, everybody in the race would have standing to sue my butt because a computer was involved in the election, and since he doesn't have a VCO that thinks 12, he must be responsible.
I got to tell you, Chris, you're on tonight, brother. You're on.
No, I try not to be. I really do. I'm diving into fantasy and escapist fiction and trying not to pay attention. It's just getting me angry.
Oh, no, I know. I talk a lot about my regular life away from the microphone. I have left these 3 days alone. It's been busy, and it's been frustrating, very frustrating. And see, I'm in one of those places where you know, I realize it's probably unhealthy, but it's what I do. You get to the end of the show, you go, and you make the ice clink in the glass, you pour in a couple of fingers of something potable. I know you don't, but, and I can't do that anymore, so now I just sort of sit and freaking quiver, Chris. I mean, I'm not at the Limbaugh jiggling phase or anything, and I'm not sweating out the dope sick on the air, but it's pressing. And unfortunately, I got to get out of here because I got a minute left.
Oh, God. Well, try the bulk section at your local Quickie Mart. Swedish berries are great for the jitters after the show.
Sounds yummy. Later.
Cheers.
Bye. Chris from Nanaimo. And it is time to get out of here. Thank you for those of you who took this International Day of the Woman and used it to both help the horn and honor those whom you love and who have made your life better. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who makes it go in any way that you can and do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to John and Ben, who are just in internet hell right now. We'll get the website up quick as we can, but at least there was a show. Thank you to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there and learn about the heroic work that Coal River Mountain Watch does. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Okay!
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Just we had a Prism West Virginia broadcast yesterday afternoon. You might have noticed. Hi, I'm Bob. And all the equipment didn't come in. And so at the last minute, I looked around and I said, "Wait a minute, earphones, headphones, cans, something." So that's what I'm doing right now is hooking up the cans. Really, kid you not. I know. Someday, I will have a handler. Someday, these sorts of things... sound! Someday, these sorts of things will not happen. But not today. No. For now, they're going to keep happening. Periodically. Because that's just kind of how it is when you're out there making progressive radio on the razor's edge. But we'll be okay, right? Yeah, we will be. Yeah, I've got my bottle of water here. Gone are the days when I would have a bottle of pop or a root beer or a glass of lemonade or anything like that. No, those days are gone. Got me a bottle of water here, and we got 3 hours of Moran Monday ahead of us. And before we get to that portion of the program, which is, in fact, the program, just a little reminder about why it is that you continue to support the Horn. Now, Flush Flemball, the oxymoron, recently redubbed Jabba the Slut, is still out there attacking Ms. Fluke. He is hemorrhaging advertisers by the boatload. Some are still sticking around with him, however, like LifeLock. LifeLock, for instance, you may have noted in my tweeting, if you follow me on Twitter, LifeLock purports to protect your identity, and yet that same company continues to advertise with a man who has spent the last week brazenly, shamelessly, vilely, filthily attacking the identity of a private citizen. You know what? I can say that I would not do business with LifeLock if they were the last company on the planet. And I can say so without fear of reprisal. Because they're not paying to advertise on the program. Because Flush Flemball is not the only radio program with whom LifeLock advertises. And from time to time, it gets frustrating for you, I know. God knows it gets frustrating for me. And all of us here on the all-volunteer staff of the Horn. To constantly be reminding and saying, hey, you know, fundraising, blah, 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 blah. Got to keep the lights on, yada, yada, yada. but that's how this exists. And isn't it nice? And this is one of those moments that reminds us. Isn't it nice to be able to tune into? Because God knows, being able to have the freedom to say it is nice. And not worry that anything you hear is in any wise self-censored, either overtly or subliminally, because of the effects of advertising money. Now, I don't know how much LifeLock pays per ad on Limbaugh, but it probably goes in excess. Well, they probably pay per ad more than it takes to run the horn for a year. So we're not talking about chump change here. And at least we, here, you and I, are free to carry on conversations as we deem fit and appropriate, without fear of reprisal from some advertiser. And that's because you all support the program month in and month out. We pulled up $400 short, something like that, $400 short in February. But, you know, hey, February is a short month. If we'd had that extra couple of days, who knows? We might have made it. But as it is, we pulled up short, and the monthly fundraising struggle continues. I'm tickled to see a kind contribution to the Thrifty 250 has come in just a moment ago, and I have a note. You remember our buddy Scott in Sweden. Scott, who rewrote the rules of Monopoly, who has offered commentary and thoughts along the way from his vantage point, being an American expatriate who has become a Swede and is looking back on an increasingly bizarre culture here. Scott writes in. And he says, hey, Bobba Rebob. I haven't heard that in a while. I've been plunking along here, catching the podcast, and largely enjoying the show, except for the fact that elected Republicans and their bizarro base are increasingly bat-brain bonkers. It is astounding that a guy like Rick Santorum is actually in the running. That guy would have been an enthusiastic inquisitor in the Middle Ages. And when you listen to his voice, you can hear he believes what he is saying and is drunk on the excitement of it all. I'm generally not very optimistic about the American public, largely due to the incredibly well-funded right-wing noise machine atop an underfunded and rather mediocre educational standard since Ronald Reagan. Nonetheless, it is hard to believe that Santorum will do anything but flame out, because those who would be naturally attracted to his message have certainly discovered him already, while the discovery of his message and theocratic ambitions will be a huge turnoff by everyone else. And as that American Ayatollah is too ambitious to keep his mouth shut, he will eventually be left babbling ever louder on a receding soapbox being dragged off to the dustbin of 2012's history. I dread to think through whom his replacement will be in the near future, notes Scott. Yes, he says, there is the fascist fourth or third as a share of the population, but that is not going to be enough to put Rick Santorum in the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue sanatorium, unless, of course, for extreme video voting shenanigans, which that's always out there. So Scott closes by offering a Beat the Swede challenge. He initially envisioned it as a challenge to new contributors to the horn, then rethought it. But at any rate, Scott is putting a challenge out there to the tune of $250. That's 25 Thrifty 250 contributions that he would prefer be new contributors. But it doesn't preclude anyone else. No. What he says now is, here's a better plan. For every month in which the donations are fully subscribed, i.e., we hit the target of $2,500, this expat, meaning Scott, will automatically chip in an additional $100. He says, I tend to be around that much per year anyways, albeit in only four quarterly chunks. And he says, that's what I'm willing to do. Kick in an extra $50 if we hit the target. So there we have this month's and ongoing Beat the Swede challenge. And hopefully, at some point in the summer, there may be a trip in back here to America for Scott, and we may actually get to have a real-time conversation with him, just in general, since he's about 6 hours ahead of us there, and it's about 12 minutes after midnight or so, and Scott tends not to listen live to the program, as he has something generally referred to as a real life during the daylight hours. So thanks very kindly to Scott for his Beat the Swede challenge this month. It is much appreciated. And our buddy Jim noting early on, the RMS Rude Mad Sycophant, RMS, get it? The RMS Rush Limbaugh has hit an iceberg for sure. And I checked just before showtime, and yeah, he's at 12 companies having dropped his pendulous butt thus far. But he is not, and I want to be clear, he is not the focus of this Moran Monday. He's too far, professional broadcaster here. You see how easy it is to get your tongue tied around your tonsils or even the little scar-like nubbins left of them from when they were taken out when you were three? Yes, it's very difficult. No, he is not the focus of this Moran Monday. He is far too much a Moran emeritus to deserve his own Moran Monday. After all, we want to encourage... Well, do we want to encourage the Morans? I don't know. But at any rate, we want to be able to make sure that we continue to have a Moran Monday. And with that in mind, I had some other nominees. Yes, indeed. Oh, yes, indeed. And this one feels downright funny. Strange, even. You know, not funny, ha-ha, funny, weird. Because I never envisioned the day when I would find myself on the same side as Miley Cyrus. I mean, this is Billy Ray Cyrus' daughter. With the icky Disney show and the fact that I thought that my youngest daughter was going to have her mind completely warped by that vile, mouse-driven dreck. So imagine my surprise over the weekend when I got a tweet from Free Exploration and subsequently got a tweet from several others, including our buddy Isaac, that it looks like Miley and we are on the same side of something. You may recall that at earlier phases of her life, she has described her personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. Well, she's gotten out from under Daddy's thumb and started doing a little bit of thinking for herself, and that's never good for organized religion, that whole thinking for yourself thing. And lo and behold, well, she's in trouble. She is indeed. She's in trouble with whom? Well, with her little Fundy fans. And it stems from this. It stems from something she tweeted. Now, a week or so ago, she took to the Twitterverse. Still not very comfortable with all this terminology. To complain about online stalking and online mean people. Because as the bumper sticker so adequately and truly notes, mean people suck. Oh, wait a minute. Getting ahead of myself here. There we go. See? It wouldn't be Maury and Monday without this now, would it? Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Step right up. Get your program. Get your program here. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. It is Moran Monday on the horn. Look behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, and for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you can find Morans beyond your wildest dreams, beyond your imagination, the fruit of nightmares. We advise women to hang on to their purses and children not to be admitted. No one will be admitted to the Moran Monday tent after the first 5 minutes. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Step away from the midway. Never mind the little rigged games. This is real reality in all of its fascinating spectrum. It's Moran, the Moran spectrum, the invisible, unhearable, finally to you, hearable and knowable behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Head for the hills, people, or you'll be up to the armpits and Morans. Now let's get into, yeah. So Miley Cyrus sent out a tweet. And her tweet was of remarks by an individual by the name of Lawrence Krauss, a thinker of sorts. From the sounds of things, heir apparent to the thoughts of Carl Sagan, for instance. It was Carl Sagan, you might recall, who introduced the popular culture of the United States and the world to the idea of star stuff, that we are all made of star stuff. And it's a beautiful thing. It was Carl Sagan who gave us the remark, blah. And I only finally finds that somewhere down the road, because it is both profoundly humbling and at the same time liberating to contemplate the universe in such a fashion. But Miley Cyrus, to get right down to it, tweeted the following remark by Lawrence Krauss. And it has engendered a furor among the strychnine swigging, floor rolling, tongue speaking, serpent handling, right wing religion industrial complex against her. You know, because they're Christians, and after all, Christians are so forgiving. This is where we would ordinarily cue the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, who said, "They came up to me after a show in Alabama and said, 'I didn't like them things you said about Jesus,' and I looked at them and said, 'So forgive me!'" Yeah, that doesn't sink in real good. Here is what Lawrence Krauss has said. And I'm going to turn down the Moran music, because this is most assuredly not Moran stuff. This is beautiful. A lot of you will be saying, "Hey, where do I find it?" I don't know. Look up Lawrence Krauss. K-L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E-K-R-A-U-S-S. "Every atom in your body came from a star that exploded. And the atoms in your left hand probably came from a different star than the atoms in your right hand. It really is the most poetic thing I know about physics. You are all stardust. You couldn't be here if stars hadn't exploded. Because the elements, the carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, iron, all the things that matter for evolution, weren't created at the beginning of time. They were created in the nuclear furnaces of stars. And the only way they could get into your body is if the stars were kind enough to explode. So forget Jesus. The stars died so you could be here today. I suspect somewhere along the way that Lawrence Krauss's remarks also are somewhat of a riff on a very famous short story called The Star by Arthur C. Clarke. But just as our buddy Dr. John wrote a couple of weeks back, remarking on the anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin, talking about scientific theoretical elegance, so too this is elegant, and it's beautiful. And it is made more beautiful by virtue of the fact that it is true. It's real. I sat down and had a conversation along these lines with Ferg at one point, and once it began to dawn on him, his eyes got wide. And you could see the sparkle of the fire of igniting light of thought. And bang! And that's one of those moments that, as a parent, you tend to cherish. But this all went out on her Twitter account. And her tweeps had a plum fit. Saying, so what, you forgot Jesus? Will you just go to hell? Some fine Christianity there. Let's see, and then at Miley Cyrus. So you are no longer a Christian? Forget Jesus? ? Seriously? What has happened to you out there in the famous world? What? I don't think that necessarily says she isn't. That's entirely her business. But it does suggest that she has become aware not of the wider world around her, but of the wider universe. A universe that really doesn't have any room for chatty copperheads or gossipy water moccasins, or the idea that women are at fault for the introduction of sin. It amazes me that Christianity ever got any women involved in it at all. Filthy sinners! And of course, as we did discuss some of the Flush Flemball business, you have to remember that that has its roots in, too. Because even though it's not canonical, the church for generations, centuries, millennia, or the better part of all of one and the better part of the second, taught that Mary Magdalene, the woman closest to Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, that she was a whore. This whole conscience business about contraception has its groundings in concepts of original sin, brought to you by, and in concepts of, misogyny. Pure and simple. So, although I was never much of a fan of the show, I mean, it was a children's show after all, some kudos to Miley Cyrus. for having the courage of her convictions. And then, well, it is more Ann Monday, and it's hard to avoid one particular story, and that is the story of a young woman in New York State who has had the temerity to speak up about what it means to be young and black in the 21st century American educational system. It is, daggummit, where'd the tab go? I can't leave this place for a minute. Well, at any rate, she penned an essay at the age of 13. Talking about quality of education and discussing what it means for young people of color, to continue to be educationally shortchanged in this country. She's in eighth grade. Like I said, 13 years old. Her over at the Black Youth Project, blackyouthproject.com, her essay is described as incendiary. And it links to a story at Good. Williams, her name is Jada Williams. She wrote an essay about Frederick Douglass. You might recall that the way the state of Georgia treats Frederick Douglass is to make him the subject of jokes about, or not jokes, but math questions about how many beatings Frederick got in a week, or how much cotton Frederick might chop. In New York State, young Ms. Williams was concerned with more concrete issues relating to the modern world. She said packing 30 or 40 students into a crowded classroom and having mostly white teachers give them packets and pamphlets to complete that they don't fully comprehend impedes the learning process, and that it produces results similar to those hoped for by, and this is the part that got her in trouble, and I'll explain what I mean by trouble, that such an educational system produces results similar to those hoped for by a slave master that forbade his slaves from learning how to read at all. In short, she asserts, ain't nothing much has changed. The same old discrimination still resides in the hearts of the white man. Now, here's how the grown-ups, no, really, the grown-ups responded. According to the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, Williams' parents transferred her to another school and then withdrew her altogether. Because pissed off teachers and administrators at the school launched a campaign of harassment against a 13-year-old. And thus, our nomination of those teachers and administrators here on Moran Monday. A 13-year-old opines on the quality of education she and other children of color are afforded, using that term loosely. And the response is not to engage with her in more dialogue, but rather to torment her. She actually read, you know, young Jada Williams, she actually read the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass there in Rochester, New York. And the teachers and administrators were so offended that they kicked her out of class, and they even tried to suspend her from school, leading her parents to withdraw her from that school, and eventually to just decide to homeschool her altogether. This paragraph is so telling. In her essay, which was written for a contest, Williams reflected on what Douglass heard his slave master, Mr. Auld, telling his wife after catching her teaching Douglass how to read. This is a quote from Mr. Auld. If you teach that, you know the word, how to read, there will be no keeping him. It will forever unfit him to be a slave. He would at once become unmanageable and of no value to his master. Ms. Williams' assertion was that overcrowded, poorly managed classrooms effect the same end, that they deprive children of essential learning. In modern context, she noted that the vast majority of her teachers are white, and the vast majority of students at the school in Rochester are black and Hispanic. And she said that they occupy a, quote, position of power to dictate what I can, cannot, and will learn, only desiring that I may get bored because of the inconsistency and the management of the classroom. She says teachers mostly just pass out pamphlets and packets. And she says, most of my peers cannot read and or comprehend the material that has been provided. She says, nothing much has changed since the time of Frederick Douglass. Quote, just different people, different era, and the same old discrimination still resides in the hearts of the white man. Essays generally have an argumentative bent. I don't mean that from a nasty standpoint, but from the standpoint of having a position that they advocate. And her argument was, start making these white teachers accountable for instructing you. And for this, she was thrown out of class. For this, she was threatened with suspension from school. And for this, we nominate teachers and administrators at Rochester School Number 3 in Rochester, New York, with a slot on this, the 5th day of March 2012's Moran Monday. It's worth noting that only 19% of School Number 3's 8th graders are proficient in language arts as of last year's testing, and just 13% are proficient in mathematical skills. It is not like Jada Williams wrote her essay without empirical data upon which to ground her thesis. but in a quickly devolving America, reference the educational system remarks made by our buddy Scott in Sweden in his email at the top of the program, the response to this problem is not to examine the system and see if her argument has merit, but for God's sakes to make her shut up! Our buddy Clayton, the militant sociologist, says people keep repeating the meme that education deteriorated beginning after the Lord Ray gun. Please let me assure the listeners of the Horn that aid to education and its quality started its decline after FDR. Democrats and Republicans have each contributed to the decline of our educational system, especially in Appalachia. And I would go so far as to modify that by saying that public education began going to hell when white people were told that they were going to have to educate right next to their little white children, they were going to have to educate children of color. Because for some reason, there's this thing that occupies or animates or what energizes the soul of white folks in America that says if they have to share any of the public good ain't good anymore, and it's damn sure not worth keeping public. You can't blame the parents for taking her out of that system, but you know what? She has a constitutional right to that public education. And by driving her from the school system, the Rochester, New York school system has effectively denied it to her. But of course, within the scope of the argument that she made, it was being denied to her before ever she put pen to paper. Sometimes more in Monday is sometimes the more ands aren't funny. Of course, it wasn't funny when they were when the morons were tweeting to Miley Cyrus to go to hell either, now was it? This one's a little too easy. Pat Boone. Love letters in the sand, Pat Boone. White Bucks shoes, Pat Boone. Acne statin, Pat Boone. Father of Debbie Boone, Pat Boone. Who in his adulthood became some sort of weirdo right-wing fundamentalist huckster. He's all upset, of course, about that one in the White House. In 2007, America thought it was electing a president. We never dreamed we were electing an emperor. Are you among the many who've noticed for a long time now? Many who've noticed? Data? Citation, Pat? Anything? Nah, they don't. No, that's that scientific stuff. No. How many times Mr. Obama uses the word I in every speech, every press conference, every White House release? In ever imperious ways, he states what I have notified Senate leaders whom I have appointed both to traditional posts and to his own newly created czarships over previously less regulated pursuits. How many times in his State of the Union addresses has he told Congress and the Supreme Court what I will do in the coming months? And what I'm directing various departments to do, and even what I will not allow while I'm president? What does he want him to refer him to? The Pharaoh? That would probably make them happy. See, he's not a Christian! Even in Great Britain, where there is a legitimate monarchy, a reigning queen, the little lady. Really, Pat? The little lady? Her Highness, the Queen of England, head of the House of Windsor, the little lady. Oh, little lady, you just get on back there up on the throne and mind your own business there, why don't you? The little lady never uses the personal pronoun in her statement. She always uses the less personal, we. It's we desire and we believe and it is our wish. Recognizing that in a very real but unstated way, she rules by the consent of her people. No, that's not it at all, Pat. It is the fact that that royalty deems itself in a continuous state of ownership, so that she's not only speaking for the past lineage, but the future lineage and the present occupier of the lineage as well. Thus, the we. In America, what happened to we the people? What happened to the constitutional separation of three equal powers in our government? Yeah, let's ask him that about separation of church and state. Well, that's not real. And, of course, he works his way around to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. In a recent interview on Egyptian TV, she actually said, I would not look to the United States Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. She said South Africa, Canada, and Europe had better models. We're the best, damn it, we are! Common sense would dictate, in light of that sentiment, that she should resign immediately from the court, since she swore to uphold and defend it.
Well, defend it doesn't mean saying, Nanya, it's the best, you all suck, ours is the best one.
That's not what defend the Constitution means. If you actually want to hold people up to the whole defend the Constitution oath standard, then we could pretty well get rid of the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. Scannity. Maybe that's what the rats is. Scannity. Scalia and Kennedy. Scannity. We could get rid of them 2 or 3 days ago, and the Constitution would be in a lot better shape. Yeah, so there you are. Barack Obama's going to get your mother's Bible's freedom. Ray, I share your concerns. Ray writing in, I hope this doesn't mean Pat's going to make another hip-hop album, and don't worry, I won't play that. He knows, strange how non-white drones are even less important. Adding that I guess educators are the last ones, going back to the Jada Williams story, that want to hear that George Carlin was right when he said we are only taught enough to make us useful drones. Like I said, well, I wait for more Ann Monday. I really do. And you know that you know, of course, that the right wing has a case of the hopping up and down from one foot to the other, itch for a good old war with the Iran, right? They want one real bad. Well, that hooting and hollering for war turns out to have had consequences. I know it seems comparatively, or it seems weird to say this, but on a comparative basis, it's true. As between the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and Ahmed Ahmadinejad, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Ahmadinejad, President Ahmadinejad is the sane one. Like I said, I realize it's a matter of comparative sanity. But they done went and had themselves a little election in Iran. And in that election, Ali Khamenei won big. Now those two, Ahmadinejad and Khamenei, have gone back and forth over Ahmadinejad's somewhat populist message to his domestic audience and Khomeini's insistence on iron-fisted theocratic religious rule. Think of it as maybe the difference between a country ruled by Rick Santorum and a country ruled by Romney. Well, guess what? With that analogy at hand, let's just say that in the election that they have had in Iran, Santorum won. And so now he's going to eliminate the post of president of Iran altogether and completely concentrate power in himself via a prime minister that his puppets in the parliament will choose. And that response came specifically as a result of all the saber rattling, all that war hunger by the right wing, all that hollering for bomb 'em now. One expert from the New York Times article, Ali Akbar Mousavi Khomeini, who had been a member of the Iranian parliament as part of its reformist movement, said if they can get that, namely to eliminate the post of president, they will not hold the next presidential election. Instead, parliament will choose a prime minister, and then Khomeini will essentially have everything he does approved and pushed through parliament by his allies. We know so little of that nation. About the only thing that most of America knows about Iran is that they'd still like to nuke it. You know, just for the whole hostage crisis thing. They know nothing of the history of a democratically elected prime minister who was removed from office by a coup founded and supported by the fledgling United States CIA in the early years of the 1950s. They know nothing of that. And just as Barack Obama over the weekend noted that loose talk of war with Iran plays into the hands of the extremists there, well, bang, here it is. The Iranian Foreign Ministry issued a statement on its website saying that by turning out in droves, Iranians, quote, especially in this sensitive historical era, have shown that despite all of the conspiracies, pressures, and sanctions, and the bleak portrait painted by the media of global arrogance, they will continue defending independence and the national interest. See, it doesn't matter how creepy the ruler when you start talking about wanting to slaughter people in the streets. You know, like Tucker Carlson did a week or so ago. When you start doing that, you drive people into the arms of their autocratic rulers and not toward anything resembling that much-vaunted democracy that we say we favor. The pro-democracy movement in Iran has been squashed like a bug. And it's been squashed like a bug as a result of the assassinations, the sabotage, the underhanded dirty dealings that we and Israel have engaged in, primarily Israel. Because, frankly, Israel always has to have, especially the right-wing hard-line Israelis, they always have to have a bete noire. They have to have something threatening them to justify the bristling military presence that they insist on maintaining, not to mention their nuclear arsenal. Yeah, it's kind of funny. The Obama administration sat down with North Korea, offered him some food, and the North Korean said, you know what? I think we can suspend the nuclear program if we can stop starving to death. Now, I'm sure it was said with a little more brusque tone and some bristling and some nastiness back and forth, but that was the gist of it. But we can't take any sort of a similar approach with Iran because rapprochement with Iran would drive the right wing bananas. And I don't necessarily know that we want an Iran with a weakened Ahmadinejad. Mousavi Kohaini said Ahmadinejad will be much weaker. Ali Khamenei has the leverage now to respond very strongly and very swiftly. And you can't but argue that some of this was done specifically because of the constant, sickening saber-rattling of the American bloodthirsty right wing. And the irony is not lost on David in Tennessee with regard to Pat Boone. He said, suddenly Patriot Pat, singer of the insipid love ballad, loves the English monarchy? Damn, just like recently the Southern Baptist hard shells are all in love with Israel and the Roman Catholics? Say, what? Bob, I have missed way too many memos. Well, that's okay. We're not getting them either, David. Because the psychotic right wing is just making them up as they go along. They are, the right wing is at this point entrenched in a notion of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And it is causing them to have a lot of weird friends that they have never, ever had before. Our good friend Jude pointing out that Pat Boone will be getting together with John Starve Hagee and a bunch of other Dominionists in short order. Coming in May of 2012 at the Crown Plaza Times Square in Manhattan, each year the Jerusalem Banquet is an exciting celebration of Jerusalem and our shared Judeo-Christian values that draws local and national leadership from both the Christian and the Jewish communities. This one-of-a-kind gala event includes participation from leading figures from both communities, united in heart and purpose, as together we seek solutions to the rise of an anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-Western values, speech, and activity on college campuses.
What, Edith?
Christian leaders such as Jack Hayford, Frederick Casey Price, Pat Boone, John Hagee, Harry Jackson, and others have joined with Jewish leaders including Harvey Kruger, Erwin Hochberg, Ron Plotkin, Shimon Aram, the Consul General of Israel, and others in participation. The Consul General of Israel? Inspiring music by Robert Stearns. I thought that was Steams. I don't have my glasses on. Exciting speeches, a wonderful VIP reception, and top-level honorees make this event a must-attend for... Wouldn't you love to go there with a little hidden webcam? And you gotta love their language. But for anyone who cares about arming the next generation to defend Israel and our Judeo-Christian worldview on campuses and in life. Arming. You know, like with guns. Yeah, remarking on the ignorance of Americans on foreign policy, Ron and Raleigh writing in, Bob, they don't know that Iran has not attacked outside its borders in over 300 years. They also don't know that before the overthrow of Mossadegh, that the Iranians had a parliament for over 100 years. No. No. No, Ron. They don't. Oh. Oh, too true. We will be taking bets for anyone wanting to bet against. David in Tennessee has the four. Count on little Timmy Jibo at the Hagee Fest. Yeah, anybody want to bet against? Yeah, I didn't think so. And with 6 minutes to go in the hour, this, as a sort of nonpartisan cap to the Moran Monday nominations. Do you remember what was it, a couple of years back, when I brought you the story of the Alabama Crimson Tide fan who went down to Toomer's Corners in Auburn, Alabama, and using some heavy-duty industrial herbicide poisoned the oak trees there that had been a traditional rallying place and celebration point for Auburn football and basketball victories, primarily football. Yeah, that's fandom sort of getting out of hand. Yeah, he was dealt with, mainly because he called a radio station, and you know, sports radio. Roll Tide, I just want to tell everybody I killed them damn trees. That's more or less the gist of what he said. Well, this story is not that. I mean, those trees were just a few hundred years old. And no, there's nothing in this story that suggests that sports were involved, mercifully. Neither Gators, Seminoles, nor Hurricanes. It's a story out of the Orlando area. It's a story of a tree. A cypress tree. Cypress trees have a way of being very, very long-lived. Down in Mexico, there's a tree referred referred to in English as the Montezuma cypress. It's referred to there by its Nahuatl name, the Ahuehuete tree. The biggest of them is some 138 feet in circumference. It's 2,000 years old. In Chapultepec Park in Mexico City, formerly Tenochtitlan, there are yet ahuehuetes that were planted literally at the order of the Uitlatoanis, the revered speaker chiefs of the Mexica people, prior to the arrival of the Spaniards. They are long-lived trees, cypresses. And near Orlando stands a tree, stood a tree, that had been nicknamed the Senator. At 3,500 years old, it was among, not the, but among the oldest pond cypress trees on the planet. Beloved in its community. Enter, allegedly, one Sarah Barnes. The tree was quite alive. It was 118 feet tall, but it was hollowed out in its lower levels, not uncommon. And apparently, she went to sit in the hollow of the tree to enjoy her meth. No, really. Snort it, smoke it, inject it, I don't know. But somewhere along the way, because meth makes you a genius, somewhere along the way, she decided what she'd like to do is build a little fire inside the 3,500-year-old cypress tree. And then she took pictures of the fire that she started inside the 3,500-year-old cypress tree. She apparently wanted to see better while doing whatever she was doing with her meth inside the 3,500-year-old cypress tree, and thus started the fire. In short, she burned the tree from the inside out for several hours, caused a 20-foot section of the tree to collapse from the top before the rest of the tree collapsed as well. She's been charged with malicious burning of land. That's a third-degree felony in the state of Florida. It's the most you can get for burning down something that's 3,500 years old and still alive. But when the authorities executed their search warrant, they also discovered, you know, a lot of meth. Enough to charge her with possession of methamphetamine with intent to deliver, as well as possession of drug paraphernalia. As of the writing of this story, she was being held in Seminole County Jail on a total bond of $5,950. I would say that at least $10 per year of age of the tree would have been appropriate. That would have been held her for, what, $35,000 bond? It was 18 feet wide. Thirty-five hundred years old. Three men standing with arms outstretched could not reach around it. I'm reading the story over at Huffington Post, and there's a lot of people who are aggrieved by it. But then along comes well, where'd it go? Maybe I missed it. Along came a fundy. Saying that it is wrong to grieve the death of a tree because we are to take dominion, oh, there's that word, over the earth. Another sensitive soul says, I have to laugh at all the people getting so bent out of shape over a tree, LOL. It's a tree, people. We have billions of them. Trees outnumber humans exponentially. Why don't you focus your anger on something that actually matters? To me, a tree that was, I mean, think about it, 3,500 years old. That tree was a sapling on a continent untouched by white people and all of their diseases. It was a sapling when a volcano erupted in the Mediterranean Sea and eliminated the culture we know as the Minoans. That tree was 1,500 years old when an itinerant rabbi walking across the barren wastes of Palestine, preached to his and to anyone who would listen that we had best learn to love each other. That tree was 3,000 years old when Michelangelo Buonarroti lay on his back daubing paints on the plaster of the Pope's private chapel in Rome. Even once the white people got here, that tree survived the Spanish, the British, and the Americans. It even survived the sprawl of the late 20th century. It had the good fortune not to be somewhere, or maybe the ill fortune, that Walt Disney wanted to put a theme park. But it could not survive one idiot on meth. So that is where we begin this Moran Monday on the Horn. You know how to reach the program. The lines are open. 877-443-2366 is the toll-free number. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D at gmail.com. And thank you for those of you who have chipped in to funding effort for the beginning of this month of March. It is much appreciated. The Beat the Swede Challenge is underway. And this is The Horn, and I am Bob.
Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth? Ooh, heaven is a place on earth. They say
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I have to admit, I love 80s pop. And that's one of my favorites, that Belinda Carlisle tune. Just seemed appropriate at the time. 13 minutes past the hour on this Moran Monday edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. The phones are open. A couple of lines left if you want to get in the queue. 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333 is how you reach the program. D just dropped a note by. I know what you mean. As a former born and raised Southern liberal, I've now lived in the Northeast. I watch the South. I wonder every day if things will ever change behind the cornbread curtain. I still have friends and family in the South, and they just don't get it. I wonder if the rest of the country have any idea what it's like to live in the South. People so willing to be used by the people with money or political power. I'm not sure if they'll ever come out of the ether, says D. P.S. I was born and raised in Mississippi Stan. So D, therefore, knows the region, to say the very least. All right, then. Let's see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
You are forgiven for your 80s contemporary Aquanet pop sins, my son.
Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, pop culture correspondent David.
Yes, and I just want to say, just to point this out, if you go back 4 or 5 weeks ago, the Horn was so ahead of the curve because I brought this story up.
Yes?
Regarding the tree.
Yes, 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 yes. You're absolutely right. I do recall that. I knew I was struck. Yeah.
And my comment is on this, is that when you have an instance like that, regardless of if it's a drug addict or not, you should have harsh penalties automatically. And my penalty would be, and I'm thinking just off the cuff here, would be some people dressed up as trees with flamethrowers chasing the meth addict.
That would be fun. Kind of like a 21st century pissed off ant brigade with better weaponry.
But to make it really progressive, there would be no possible harm or danger. It would just be all psychological. And then afterwards, you would sit down the woman and explain.
I don't know. Sometimes meth heads, you know, meth is hard on the human body. Sometimes meth heads just drop dead. Didn't one do that just last week? 43 years old, out for a walk in the middle of the night, pavement faceplant.
It is amazing how many people have the constitution to keep going on meth, and those that don't. It would make for an interesting laboratory study on a lot of the meth addicts who are able to continue without really keeling over. In the same sense of crack, that amazes me too, Bob. When you think about like people that are really, really strong with their bodies, you look at some people who are crack addicts or cocaine addicts for that matter, and they never fall down. Here's, for example, Sly Stone. That's an amazing.
Well, let me offer you another one. How about Pope Leo the 12th? I'm not kidding.
I'm sure.
Late 19th century, sat on the throne of St. Peter for a couple of decades, and was a seriously damn near scandalous cokehead.
Exactly, and you could go with...
Live to 93.
There are so many examples. Keith Richards is a perfect example. You know, we can just keep going on and on. Lou Reed. It's amazing how so many people, and then just some people who just say, you know what, I think I'm just going to try this, and then just keel over and die. It just baffles, it boggles the whole mind when you think about it, why that is.
Well, you know, in his autobiography, Keith attributes it to having been a relentless, to have relentlessly insisted upon quality. But I always thought Keith was more of a smack man myself, but maybe both. I don't know.
Well, when you listen to what Keith was doing in the life book, he was very meticulous about the different drugs he would take, and he would use something for an equalizer every single time. So in a sense, he was like a pharmaceutical chemist. And then that just goes to show you the genius of Keith when it comes to drugs. It's like you're thinking like this when you're doped out of your mind, really?
Well, this is kind of celebrity gossipy.
Yeah.
But I was when I was driving a couple of weekends ago, I was listening to NPR because the alternatives when you get into rural Kentucky get to be pretty slim pickings on the AM dial, let me tell you.
I can imagine.
The, you know, speaking in tongues and rolling on floors and the like.
Yeah.
And, I'm not even gonna go into it. You can get the voice of the South and some classic country on WSM out of Nashville. But apart from that, the AM dial is just a mess. So anyway, I was listening to NPR, and they did a story on the 500th episode of The Simpsons,
mm-hmm.
And they interviewed some writers. And they offered up a tale of two rock and rollers. One being Mick Jagger, who was strictly business, came in, read his lines, and left. The other being Keith, who said he wanted nothing more than a bottle of vodka and a 2-liter bottle of orange pop.
Uh-huh.
Came in, did his lines, and hung out with the Simpsons gang for the rest of the afternoon, and the guy said it was the most memorable day of my life. It was just so much fun. He was just genial and laughing, and you know, we had a ball.
Right.
So yeah, and by the way, the history of meth, Jim pointing out, first introduced in 1936 in Germany under the name of Perviton. Guess who took it daily? Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, short guy, tan suit, Charlie Chaplin mustache. Yeah, that guy.
Well, I've learned a lot about meth from watching Breaking Bad.
Oh, what a show! Yeah, I know. I don't get to watch it. See, I hate serial television, David, because
right.
I can't. You know, inevitably, sooner or later, I will. Yeah, I'll either commit to it, miss one, and hate myself. Or I'll commit to it, not miss any, and they'll do what ABC did to me with Life on Mars.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Halfway through the run, go, screw it, we're going to end it next week. Nothing's going to make sense. And to those of you who are watching,
Well, I think Bryan Cranston, I mean, this is his moment in the sun for, like, a complete innovation through a character of where beforehand he was in the sitcom role, and he's completely done a breakthrough role regarding this. But I have a lot of respect for Breaking Bad because they have the arc to the series of where they want to end it. I think it's one more season and it's done.
Yeah, whereas, on the other hand, those of us... you do this to me, you know that?
Yeah.
I got talked into Mad Men.
Yeah, I bounced off one season, Bob, I gotta tell you.
I got talked into it, stayed with it, tried to be there with the clicker at, 9 or 10 o'clock on Sunday nights, and then, you know, it's a fight over when we're going to do the next season. I'm like, goodbye. I don't have the patience for it anymore. I just don't. By the way, the fan mail coming in from Ray,
yeah.
The subject of the email, Faraway Eyes. Keith Richards and a 19th century pope in the same conversation. God, I love this show.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned we're talking about shows. I have to mention the show every single time I get on, because I just think it's such an important show to watch, and it's relevant for our times, and plus it's funny. Don Cheadle's House of Lies is a work of genius. I mean, my God, the way they put this together, the way they explain consulting, the world of business, the way they do the play-by-play and explain all the different terms, and how Don Cheadle speaks to the camera and says, what I'm going to do here is what we call an HES. Now we're going to move, and then they show the arrows moving to different directions. Really clever show, Bob. Just amazing. And Cheadle, my hat's off to that man. Everything that guy does, I'm on board with him.
I've got to check it out. I just got to.
I
got to ask you though, since I brought a little pop culture to the table for Moran Monday.
Right.
Are we all Miley Cyrus now?
She definitely gets a hall pass for that. I'm with her on that.
I mean, of all the things that you would expect Miley Cyrus to tweet, something that elegant. I just had visions. Just thinking about that, I had visions of Billy Ray in the bathroom with his rat tail and a set of pair of clippers, you know, screaming like, I don't know, Colonel Kurtz. Not my Miley, not an atheist, because you got to remember, Billy Ray got all up in a lather about a year ago. When atheists of Kentucky or something bought a sponsorship and promised to clean up a section of Kentucky roadway.
I'm for that. I'm sure that she got that from maybe watching a TED Talk, or she was definitely surfing the internet, and once again showing why the internet is such a great tool for even teen celebrities.
And you know what? I allowed myself, and this is not sick, okay? When I read everything on this story, I allowed myself about 1 nanosecond of fantasy. And like I said, it's not sick, because you know what my fantasy was?
What's that?
I want her to sing a duet with Tim Minchin. You know, I mean, she'd probably do a great job with White Wine in the Sun come next Christmas time.
Stranger things have happened, I hope she speaks out more when she decides she needs to say something and not feel like she needs to go in a particular direction.
Well, I just hope some Christian doesn't decide to hurt her.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will be on board if Miley Cyrus decides to be more open-minded. And for her next producer of her album, and it's a concept album of the stars produced by Rick Rubin, I might buy that.
Wait a minute. I was going to go to Rick Rubin.
Were you?
Yes.
Wow. See, there you go.
It could happen.
The connection, the mind connection is completely there. I think there's a lot of things to be said.
For Stuart Copeland or Andy Summers or, I don't know, Todd Rundgren?
There you go. Well, Todd Rundgren would definitely be Miley would have to go to the mental hospital if it was Todd Rundgren.
Well, yeah, or Walter Becker. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that seems to be a serious issue of you have to have a serious focus and discipline to be able to hang with those guys and to be able to take their constant criticism. Valid criticism, but constant criticism.
Relentless.
Relentless, yeah. Just like, you know, one of my favorites is Appa. So, yeah, I did want to say one thing which I will nominate as Moran Monday. Zombie Coulter said something that made me just go, yeah, this is strictly what I would call political trolling.
Okay.
She said, and I quote, Breitbart dying is R. Lenin.
Which, Vladimir or John?
I think she meant John. Imagine.
Okay, it was Lenin with an O.
Yeah, Lenin with an O.
Oh, stop it. I'm going to be sick.
To me, that's the perfect example of political trolling. And that's exactly what...
Yeah, just throwing something up on the wall and see if it sticks.
Right. And I really hope that C-SPAN... We'll get off this subject in a minute, people. I really hope that C-SPAN does not cover the funeral. Please do not cover the funeral, C-SPAN. If you are listening, do not cover it.
See, that's why you occupy the position you do, David, because it had not occurred to me that they might. But I suppose that it's distinctly possible... Jesus. But, you know, but wait, you know, screw C-SPAN. Come on, odds. Call Harris in Reno. Find out what the bookies are taking on CNN devotes 3 hours of coverage to Breitbart funeral.
They probably...
Whatever it is, take the over.
We're going to see tears. We're going to see tears from Wolf Blitzer if that happens.
Jesus, don't make me queue up tears in heaven. Don't do that to me.
I won't make you do that. I did want to mention this. This goes along the lines of your stars and robes that you bring up on your crystal ball.
Yeah, with the tattered sleeves and all of that, right.
Yeah, your Oddfellows robe.
Man, you haven't been on the show for a while, and you're just batting a million. Oddfellows?
Yeah, Oddfellows. I sold some... Oddfellows regalia once to some people. But anyways, so this is an interesting little quote that I heard from my governor. He said, if Romney isn't nominated, this could open up the door to a dark horse candidate.
Oh, no. Now, who do you suppose... what's his name again? Your governor.
LePage.
Yeah, LePage. I knew.
Yeah.
Just what do you reckon he means by dark horse? I mean, who?
He doesn't mean George Harrison coming back from the dead.
God! Which would be a dramatic improvement, admittedly, but...
It would be. I'd be on board for that if the GOP nominated him.
Oh.
As long as the campaign song is, I've got...
I mean, are we back to talking about Jebby again? Is that the dark horse, or is the dark horse Ron Paul?
There's an interesting article on Alternet that brings this up about the specter of Jeb, and it goes into a little bit of detail. And I'm still on board with they want to they're still reading the tea leaves. And I don't know what the percentage is, but, you know, it's for certain it's going to be 2016.
Golly, Ned.
Well, I mean, I think what they do, especially a family like the Bushes, is they just they assess the situation. They look at the game tape, so to speak, if we're going to quote Jerry Maguire. And... They look around and they say, okay, is this a place we can get in where we fit in on here? Or do we just wait this out? And they just look at all, and because they're not new to this, Bob, they know.
Oh, no. They've been at this carnival for a while.
Yes, they have. They are, That is what I would call the perfect example of an Illuminati, if there ever was one, the Bush family. They never go away.
No, don't create that image of Babs Bush dancing naked somewhere in the Bohemian Grove. Don't do that to me.
I won't.
I just did.
I did find it interesting that Barbara Bush is doing robocalls. Now, I don't know if that means she's doing auto-tune for Mitt Romney, but she's doing robocalls. And
Babs? Pearl-clutching Babs?
Yeah, I don't know if they paid her money or they paid her in blood, but yeah, so that's...
Well, you know, there are a lot of people out there that think she's the love child of Aleister Crowley, so it may have been blood.
Yes, I was alerted to that on the horn.
Yeah. So...
The other thing I wanted to mention was the whole situation with the ramp up and the talk and the fact that we can't really have any critical thinking when it comes on the issue of Iran. It's just dangerous, dangerous, dangerous all the time.
Oh, yeah, and I mean the remarks over the weekend by the president were not they weren't squishy, they weren't right. Peacenik. But, yeah, I mean, the elections kind of prove his point, don't they?
I mean, what can you do if Israel says, you know what, if we feel like attacking Iran, we're going to attack Iran?
Well, we know what the sane response would be during the conversation that he's having with that crazed little fascist Netanyahu.
Right.
The appropriate response is, listen, buddy, you so much as lift a finger towards starting a war with Iran, and every penny you get from the United States is going away, because, you know, I got crazy people in this country who think that we can't afford to buy new shoelaces anymore. Do that, and it'll go back into the general fund, okay? Are we square on this, BD?
That's when Netanyahu would pick up his shoe, and that would be the AIPAC phone.
Yeah, because you know Netanyahu has a Get Smart shoe phone, absolutely.
I mean, and they say, we got a problem here, guys. Yeah, it's a troubling situation, and I was actually watching a GPS with Fareed Zakaria, and had a journalist from one of the popular newspapers from Israel. And he basically said, no doubt about it, Israel is going to attack Iran. So he placed his chips on the table. I don't know how many times he's done this before. But I did find that interesting, because if Israel's already made their mind up for whatever it is, the summer, the fall.
So with, let's see, with Hamas in the occupied territories and Hezbollah on its northern border, somebody in the right wing government, these people in the right wing government of Israel say, you know what? Yeah, we can take them out, because they've said that. They've said that. I was reading a little bit over the weekend. Ehud Barak goes around saying, well, you know, if we start a war with Iran, it's not going to be 50,000 people dead. It's not going to be 5,000 people dead. Heck, it's not going to be 50 people dead if those 50 people will just go in their houses for a little bit. And, of course, he means Israelis and not Iranians, because, you know, you're the guy who's pumping gas at the corner of Khomeini and Mossadegh at the station. No, if you get blown away, Barak is not counting that guy or that guy's children or that guy's wife or his aging mother or father. They're not in that equation, because Iranians to these sickos on the right wing aren't really humans.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I was watching Dylan Radigan, and they had Sam Cedar and and Dylan, and they were talking, and I believe it was Sam who brought up the issue of the fact that the whole saber-rattling of Iran benefits all of the countries. It benefits Iran, it benefits Israel, and it benefits the United States. Because there's a strategy in play where they put their chips on the table, we put our chips on the table, Israel puts their chips on the table, and everyone's all in. And they do this every time. Like, it's like a same type of, like, clockwork over and over again. The same thing happens, similar to what was happening with North Korea.
And, but, you know, North Korea, we, didn't we kind of work that one out?
But I think the dynamic with Iran is a bit different, because I think it's like this moment of Ronnie Millsap's any day now, because of the fact of we have such a basic ideological hard on, if you will, for taking down Iran like I've never seen before. I mean, Korea. Well, we'll put it this way. Korea's like, you know, we'll watch the pay-per-view, but Iran, we really want to F with.
Right, and it is thus sort of a foregone conclusion.
And I found it interesting. I've just been carrying over on the dial, like with Fareed Zakaria. They keep showing the Wall Street Journal poll about how many people want to attack Iran. And I can't help but think every time you show that poll, more and more people, because we have a sheep mentality, like, you know what? Look how many people want to attack Iran. It's got to be right. And then it just keeps upticking.
Well, all of this is supposed to come down, and I guess maybe that's why they're having their little Israel banquet in May of this year with Pat Boone, John Hagee, and all of those creeps. These bloodthirsty fiends are yearning for it. They're aching for it. It really is pornographic and sick. But yeah, it does feel a little bit foregone, David, sadly. It does.
It makes you wonder what's coming next, and when that day comes, because I'm just assuming that day is going to come when they do an aerial strike on Iran. I mean, how this will all play out, and how will we quote, move on or have a transition?
Well, right. I mean, no, there's a whole lot of what ifs involved with this. Jim pointing one of them out with an email subject line: Putin. How would the Russians react to a preemptive strike on Iran, being as how they share a common border? That has to be factored into the considerations.
I'm in agreement with him, and I think that Putin should wear a Diebold T-shirt at all times, so we know exactly who he's endorsed by.
No kidding. Beautiful thing.
But I guess one last thing before I go, I did want to mention that countdown till the new Ridley Scott film. I think it's less than 3 months away.
Wow.
Actually, it is 3 months away. And for those people who don't know, Ridley Scott is working on the backstory to Alien. And I believe he's going to do maybe one or two movies regarding this. And then I guess they start storyboarding, or they start auditioning role cast, I think, sometime next year. Or I don't know if the script is done. I'm assuming it is. With the world of, I've been reading a bit on the background of the Ridley Scott family and how they make movies. Really, really interesting stuff regarding that. And it looks like the Blade Runner movie, within 3 years.
That, I'm still... That just intrigues the hell out of me.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what he does with it, and I hope if he does go, and I assume he does, because this is the market that we live in, and we just hop on trends like that no matter what. If he does go 3D, I'm going to be intrigued to see how the 3D is designed and how it is presented to us in the context that it is during that time, because in a way, we'd be like, we are in the quote-unquote future. And the interesting thing about Blade Runner, I don't think a lot of people know about this. This is like the mirror within the mirror. I've mentioned this on the show before. But a lot of Japanese architects watched that movie, Bob, Blade Runner, and they said, you know, I want to see Tokyo like that. And lo and behold, 25 years later, look at Tokyo.
Wow. Didn't think about it that way.
And with that, that is the power of inspiration, culture, art, and cinema. Moving stuff.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Well, David, have yourself a good evening. And thanks for the broad swath you have cut across the cultural landscape. And let me know when the Miley Cyrus album produced by Rick Rubin comes out.
One last thing before I go.
Absolutely.
I think people need to know the email.
Ah, bobkincaid@gmail.com.
Ah. And they can reach the program at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And you can contribute to your heart's content for this valuable program that we must have on the air.
Hear, hear. Thank you, David.
All right, Bob, later.
Have a good night. Bye now. Onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay, try another line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen, so this story, you know, I got it from the Root. Anyway, black teens allegedly light white teen on fire. Now, this says a 13-year-old Kansas City, Missouri boy was allegedly set on fire by two black teenagers. Apparently the kid lost some of his eyelashes and eyebrows, but I mean, it's just something a bit special about this story, but the punchline is the mother is, she said, you could smell the burnt skin. Coon said, the woman's name is
no.
Melissa Coon. And I'm like, is this a joke? You know, anyway. Listen, I know I'm simple, but I was just like, wow.
No, that's that God of irony.
I believe it.
The God of irony never slows down.
I know, but I don't even know if I, you know, I don't even know what's the whole story. You know what, they just rolled up on kid and threw gasoline and a match. I mean, she sounds vague, and she looks like Susan Smith. They got a picture of her right here. Oh, wait, Susan Smith is in jail, isn't she?
Prison, yes.
Yeah, anyway. I don't know. I guess I was, I just was sort of thinking, Coon, Melissa Coon, really?
That's that's the kind of thing that makes me scream. I got one fit to make you scream though.
What's that?
I'll see yours and raise it. in the midst of all of this slut business.
Yeah.
Guess who's getting his very own statue in the Hall of Famous Missourians.
Oh yeah, I saw that story. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I couldn't even believe that. I bet they're trying to rush, no pun intended, probably rushing that out, aren't they?
But guess who's he's being inducted alongside?
Oh, please don't tell me it's somebody. Who?
Dred Scott.
Oh no, I didn't even know. Oh wow, no way.
Way. Yeah, on the same day, busts of Rusty Limbaugh and Dred Scott, Day Late and a Dollar Short.
Oh my God!
Will be enshrined in the Hall of Famous Missourians in the Missouri State Capitol in Jefferson City.
Well, we really are in the parallel universe, aren't we? That's way out there. My goodness! No, that tops Miss Coon and her black attackers, but that's a good one.
I've had a hard time sorting out from a cultural or business perspective, because I'm no Imus fan, right? I mean, we're clear on that. And
yeah, but Imus called it what it was, though. Come on.
Well, but I mean, Imus got run.
No, I mean, but his comments about Rush were like...
Oh, he has opined? I missed this. Share.
I don't have in front of me, sorry, but he basically said his apology is completely insincere. He's some sort of pill-popping pig.
Oh!
Something real like that. It was hilarious. I was like, damn, Imus. Well, I can't say I blame him because, you know, Imus, his shit was pushed out on a much lesser offense, really, at this point, right?
Well, yeah, it was no, that was repulsive. I mean, I remember, but Jesus, he didn't go. Yeah. Did he go on about it for a week and a half?
Well, no, but I mean, to think about, I'm surprised that this Rush thing is blown up like that, considering that this man's been able to get away with anything. I'm like, well, what about his, you know, years of just straight up anti-black, not a peep, but he went after, you know, what they put on a pedestal, and all hell broke loose.
Well, whatever. The guy's got to go.
Well, no, but it's funny though because
I mean, he's a little too young to add, to put on the Gone to Glory list.
Well, no, no, no. I didn't care. I mean, he's, you know, the whole thing is just, I don't know. I guess he was just, you know, kind of too high or something. Because if you re-listen to what he said, it was just unbelievably appalling. It's like, dude, do you hear what you're saying? Now you're saying you want to see the girl having sex on a, you know what I'm saying? This was really crazy.
And add to that the fact that, you know, periodically David in Tennessee takes one for the team and, like, will listen to an hour of the Savage Wiener or whatever. In this case, he actually saw some Ditto Cam footage of Limbaugh, Sandra. And David, for reasons that have to do with his having been involved with rock and roll bands and so forth over the years, knows what drug abuse looks like and said that Rush is trying to get through that third hour of the program without a fix and is in such a bad state that the guy is shaking and sweating.
Yeah, no.
So, you know, again, from the same mindset that sets fire to inside 3,500-year-old cypress trees and thinks it's a good idea, All of this business about being unrepentant and, you know, I use absurdity to comment on absurd things. No, that's just junkie talk. That's just junkie talk, Sandra.
Well, obviously he overstepped because, you know, the people who butter his bread are pulling out. I think it's interesting, you know, how they're all, you know, what are they yelling, free speech? What about the free market? Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
Well, exactly.
I'm like, I don't really want to hear about it, especially from that crowd.
Yeah, these right wingers learn, you know, they love their free market until the free market behaves like a free market.
Well, it's sort of like, well, no, I mean, this fool is paid by his corporate masters to spew this stuff, and it got too hot in the kitchen, and you know, they forget that there's, you know, people want to sell their product, and what, women make up the majority of the shopping. I mean, it don't take too much to figure out that, oh, shit, he really stepped in it, you know? I mean, if you're his sponsor.
But he doubled down again today.
You know, how many people did he lose, though? Is it up to 12?
12. Yeah, he's at 12 now. But LifeLock is still hanging in there.
Well, see, LifeLock, though, I was laughing about that because I heard that the dude who found their corporations, they did a hack on him, right?
Oh, yeah, he got his identity stolen just as a matter of principle.
Oh, dude, you know, I'm thinking, wow, I don't know about your business. So,
and you know, one of the other hanger-on organizations is somebody hustling gold coins.
Netflix too, though.
Is Netflix still there?
Yeah, and I already called a number and left a few choice messages because I think you know, they need Netflix. It's like I said, damn, you already lost a lot of market share on your stock value. You might want to step away from this, you know, because they went from like $300 a share to, I don't know what they are now, 81, after they said we're going to, oh, double our prices.
Yeah, they can't take another hit like that.
They can take another hit, so apparently that's the latest one to go after. And since we are customers of Netflix in this household, you know.
I didn't know Netflix was part of the problem. They will receive communication immediately after the show.
Yeah, so that's one. The other one that I heard, which I'm not too sure about, is, I just saw it quickly, but Sears, they're another one that advertises on the show, right?
Right, but what you're seeing now is a bunch of companies saying, Jesus, we didn't know our ads were running in that show. Get them off, get them off, get them off.
Right, right. Yeah, that was the thing I heard about Sears. They were trying to say, no, we ain't running nothing. And then I guess somebody provided audio of, yes, you are running your ads on it or something like that. But you're right, there are cases of...
One station in Hawaii has dropped him.
A second one has, too.
Oh, wow. Well, that brings up another thing, and this is one of those things where people listening to the program need to sort of spread the information. It's great to go after the national advertisers, because when you do that, you're going after his bread and butter. But the other way to go after it is to go after the individual stations that carry him and call and say, we're boycotting everybody that advertises locally, too, and we're calling them. Until he is gone from your airwaves.
Yeah.
Because you know what? He can't command a $50 million a year salary if he's on 12 stations.
Well, no, but I mean, Premier, whoever's... I mean, the statements that they came out with the, well, we respect all sides of the issue, it's like, no, fool. This is well beyond all sides.
This isn't a side of the issue. This is that stupid... what's the official phrase for it? False duality, or...
Because
there's no right side of calling a woman a slut.
Yeah, exactly, that's what I mean. And especially on airwaves that are sort of public and then, paid for, you don't have any right to do that, And it's just kind of like, if these people aren't going to support your show with their advertising...
Well, it's like
have a problem.
Usually I have a hard time getting through the average Maureen Dowd column, but she nailed it this weekend when she remarked on Willard Romney saying that Rush's remark, he wouldn't have used the same words Rush used, and that they were inappropriate. And Maureen Dowd asked, well, what is the appropriate way to call a woman a slut?
Oh, yeah, no. And the Republican Party, I mean, I don't really know what is going on, but if they think they're not going to take a hit behind this, they're tripping, because their members are so, just sort of really not responding properly. They're going to try to say what? All women are sluts who use birth control?
Well, look, Eric Cantor has given him his support, but McCain did not.
Well,
this will be the test, Sandra, to find out, because in the past, if you criticize Flush, you have to immediately do a mea culpa.
Oh, McCain ain't going to apologize worth shit to him at this point. No way.
Well, one would hope.
He didn't have nothing to, yeah, anyway, yeah. No, I don't think Rush is going to, obviously not going to go off the air, but I think he took a bit of a hit on this one.
Well, I hope it continues.
I mean, we'll see.
But again, I think it was referenced on Friday night's show, and it can't be reemphasized enough to run that sort of connect the dots puzzle that goes Willard Romney, Bain Capital owns Clear Channel owns Premier. Owns Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just to hear that Bill O'Reilly, I'm just like, are you kidding me? Talking about, oh, we got to pay for your whatever recreation. And I'm thinking, well, when you're pregnant, that's not an illness either. And what is he talking about? Covering people's... it's just absurd. What I think is that this is what we have to look forward to if there's any sort of hint of national health care. You see what I mean? This is the same argument that they drag out anytime anything collective is discussed, But the thing about the birth control is that that's always been mandated. Is it Title VII of the Civil Rights? Which one is the part of the civil rights legislation that is you can't discriminate against women
Oh, Title IX, isn't it?
Title IX. Anyway, the mandated birth control fell under that regime. So there's no way you can get away with it. If you provide coverage for vasectomy and other stuff for men, you have to provide the same for women. You see what
I mean? Right, and the utter the fallacy of this religious conscience business is so on display with all of this, because what happens, let's say there's a Jehovah's Witness presidential candidate, never mind the candidacy. This would be a great time for the Jehovah's Witnesses to come out and say, we demand that no one be allowed a blood transfusion in the United States because that's our conscience.
Or Scientology.
No psychiatry.
No mental health care, you know. Yeah, no, it's just absurd. But also, though, if I may add with this idiot, is he confused? If I take a birth control pill, it's not, you don't take a damn birth control pill every time you have sex. Am I confused and thinking that this idiot is a complete moron?
No, he's got it confused with how the Viagra works, Sandra.
My God, I was just thinking.
He has to take a Viagra every time he has sex with a little Dominican boy.
Right, but you know, I just was like, oh my God. I mean, I was thinking he can't. He must. Anyway, that part had me rolling. I'm thinking this dude is completely high.
Well, I don't think he's actually had sex with a single one of his wives, but that's just me speculating.
Well, where is she?
Nobody's seen her.
You know, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, damn.
I mean, you know, Mrs. Limbaugh, don't go to the Safeway, Mrs. Limbaugh. I mean, it's Florida. Sandra, it's Florida. There's lots of people with cameras, and there's lots of celebrity gossip sites that, you know, Mrs. Limbaugh sighted while shopping for fur coat in Palm Beach. You know, that kind of, you know, I mean, think about Rodeo Drive right?
Well, I mean, especially in Florida, you know, I mean, you get around in Florida. I've been down there a couple of times, and yeah, you want to be seen.
And yet, literally, and I think you did the same thing I did, you do a Google search for Catherine Rogers Limbaugh, you do a Google search for Mrs. Rush Limbaugh, and the first hit you get is 2010.
Yeah, no. It is a question that really might have to be put to Gawker or somebody to, what's the other one, TMZ? Somebody need to dig it up, man. They need to find.
They may be saving a life.
And who knows? It's kind of like, we don't want to have to put the girl's face on a
milk carton.
Yeah.
No, well, see, that was my next thought. We need somebody who's really good with graphics in the Horn audience to do up, grab a photograph of a milk carton and put a "Have you seen this woman?" notice on the side of it, and maybe we'll send it around some places and see if maybe we can't get a story going on it.
Well, you know, I don't really know. I mean, I know the editor of the Guardian in San Francisco. Maybe I should email him and see if he has some connections somewhere else. Find out what that.
Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, nobody's seen her. It's frightening.
Actually, it is an interesting question.
Well, it is, because you remember, well, you probably haven't spent enough time tormenting your brain listening to him. I used to go up and down the road a lot, and that happened to be what was on, and I would torment my mind. And it never agreed with him, but it was something to listen to that, you know, wasn't religious broadcasting. And back when he was married to Marta, he talked about Marta constantly on the air.
Yeah, I mean, that's it.
To the best of my knowledge, he never mentions this latest woman.
That's right. I mean, he went out with that unfortunate anchor from CNN for a minute.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What happened to her? I mean, she was on TV. Where'd she go?
I don't know.
I mean, what was her name? That'd be somebody to type in, too, because last scene, man.
And none of the former Mrs. Limbaughs ever say a word.
Yeah,
I mean, they must be paid handsomely.
Paid, and you know, anybody don't give up that just to slander his nasty ass. I bet the stories are a real doozy, though. Especially with that Martha person, or whatever her name was.
Oh, it's...
Is.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry. I creeped a lot of people out running that it puts the lotion on its skin song, but...
Oh, God. Well, anyway, so, the Israeli thing, you know, is a bit of a worry because Israel has a tendency to be a bit myopic, you know, thinking differently than what the reality is. And I point you to the Lebanon War in 82. That was supposed to be a 2 or 3 day affair attacking some armed Palestinian. Do you know how long that little war lasted? It lasted 18 years.
No.
So when we hear about Israel thinking that they're going to take it out like they did in 1981 in Iraq or 2007 when they took out the reactor in Syria, you know, remember, they also thought it was going to be 2 or 3 days in Lebanon and stayed there from 1982 until whenever they left in 2005 or something.
And that's that's what I was pointing out talking with David. You know, you've got Hamas, you've got Hezbollah, and suddenly it seems like a good idea to attack Iran.
Well, no, but the thing is, I think and they're also the other thing about the Lebanon war is that also happened without any public discussion within Israel. You know, no, there wasn't a sort of robust debate about what they were doing.
But this latest one, where they rained death on civilian apartment complexes, the Israelis. They wound up going back to Israel with their tail tucked between their legs. I mean, they took
That one lasted 33 days, the last Lebanese war. So they also overestimated themselves there. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be able to, you know, set the program back 3 years or something. But to me, if they attack Iraq, that's a sure way of them getting a nuclear weapon, because I sure in the hell would.
Oh, look, nobody pursues nuclear weapons technology for offensive purposes. No one. That's historically established, except for us. We did.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, if they're gonna, because apparently the infrastructure for Iran is quite extensive. It's not just, you know, one building somewhere that's easy for them to bomb. So I just don't think...
No, it's spread out and dug down.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to be some sort of walk in the park that they might be sort of advertising. So if they're in a prolonged conflict, and they have a short memory, because if I remember right, that war between Iran and Iraq went on for a damn near decade.
Yes.
They don't, you know, so what makes Israel think that it won't be a protracted encounter? You see what
well,
I'm
saying? Well, exactly, because among other things that are extant here, one is the assumption that Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapon. The IAEA says they're not.
According to CIA and every sort of agency, alphabet agency in this country, it's been no, but they're not.
Right, and the other part of it, though, Sandra, is that it doesn't take into account, you know, because we've clothed it in the mantle of a doctrine, it doesn't take into account the Powell Doctrine. And the Powell Doctrine says if you're going to do this, you have to do it with overwhelming force, which means you have to put boots on the ground and you have to have near constant air power and air power sufficient to completely overwhelm the victim, I mean enemy.
Yeah, but that's not going to...
Israel can't do that.
And you know, I mean, I don't know. I just think that there's so many unknowns. I don't want to go Rumsfeld, but...
Well, no, but this is one of those places where you do.
You know, there is... You know, this is really tricky. You know, to hear Obama talking about he has some countries back, I'm like, what the fuck are they, a basketball team? What are you talking about? You know, he got his back. It's like, no, you need to just have our back and keep us the hell out of that mess, because That business with Israel, with their, I don't mean the Israeli people. I think they have a jacked up government, though. That's going
to. No, the Israeli people have shown that they want to, by and large, as far as I can tell, from all those marches in the streets and everything, they want to live in peace. They want a social. They want a European style social democracy.
Yeah.
And they don't want to go to war with anybody.
Right. Well, I just think the situation is really tricky. I get the feeling that, you know, the Obama administration is like, oh, hell to the no. Okay, but this man got to walk on. I mean, that pilgrimage to that weird-ass AIPAC thing every year, it's too fucking creepy at this
point. Oh, doesn't it?
Too much. It's like, what is this? You know, and that Netanyahu, he is the most arrogant, disgusting God. I've never despised a world leader more than him at this point. He's horrific.
Oh, well, like I said, he's a little fascist.
Well, yeah.
I mean, yeah, pretty. That's one of those pretty is pretty does situations, and when it goose steps like it, well, it is, yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, his whole sort of, yeah, he's too much, and the way.
Well, I mean, you know, we talk about their military policy and everything, but you yourself have remarked, Sandra, on the sort of right wing approach that they've taken to the social safety net. And to the things that used to make Israel a great place to go if you were Jewish and lived somewhere else in the world.
And also gives you a good reason to want to step up for their wars every other year, you know. But now there is no safety net. That was the whole thing about the citizens now. They're kind of questioning, well, shit, why am I serving every other year when I can't even afford to have housing, you know? So.
Yeah, what am I fighting for?
Yeah, the bargain has been broken, the contract there for a while when they went full neoliberal. So, you know, and Netanyahu has all sorts of reasons to want the war, too. That's the thing that's so worrying.
Well, it'd be great for business.
Yeah, and also just, you know, for his own political fortunes. I mean, it is such a bad government there. But, you know, this is serious because the whole idea of, like, oh, I don't think they're gonna, cut off that strait. I'm like, have you seen the size of that strait? It's not very big.
No, it's throw a rock across.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that the whole proposition is. I hope not. I don't know. I don't really know. You know, I don't know what to make of Obama's position. He was throwing down with them like there was no tomorrow in that speech. You know, cringe. Orama for me.
May meeting, their Jerusalem banquet in New York, like Jude pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
When they start rattling, Andy wrote in a little bit ago, and you know Andy's more often than not spot on, and he said saber rattling against Iran only ratchets up the fear. The defense industrial complex feeds off the fear. Continuing the flow of dollars its way. Our defense budget has risen threefold since 1997. This will guarantee it continues to rise, sapping our domestic priorities for the benefit of warmongering defense industrialists. The American people don't benefit. They continually lose as the empire's offensive firepower expands and our domestic infrastructure continues to rot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I must send you this link to, I think it's Panorama. It's a show out of the UK. Anyway, they did this show on, you know, the poverty in the U.S., the recent poverty. And it's just, it's horrific. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know. I just, the whole idea of some sort of yet another war is just, it's too much. It's ridiculous. And I don't know.
Well, I mean, we don't, I mean, I guess we could support with some Tomahawk cruise missiles and some flyovers and a down pilot story is always good for the propaganda machine, but we can't put boots on the ground.
Yeah, no, I don't know. And so it's just a bit of a worry, seeing all this go on. So we'll see. I don't know.
And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because this is the kind of crap, and I think that Andy would agree that. This feeds the speculators' little Jones and ratchets up gas prices because gas prices damn sure aren't going up because demand is.
And also, you know, today, I think McCain, has asked for airstrikes for Syria. And I'm just like, well, wait a minute. Didn't the Syrians just vote for a change in their constitution? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a supporter of Assad. But I'm not into this sort of let's create a Libya scenario. So
bombing our way to democracy? No, me neither.
So we can do that again, you know, that to protect the population.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, and, you know, Jim asks a very valid question. You know, have you considered the economic relationship between the Russian Republic and Iran? It's not widely known, not widely considered, but it certainly is a 900-pound gorilla in the room, isn't it?
Well, that's, which would explain why the U.S. couldn't get their foot in the door with the U.N. resolution, since Russia and China said no.
And that, you know, that doesn't, you know, we have stopped a lot of resolutions in the U.N. Security Council on Israel's behalf. But what's frustrating is that Israel never seems to manifest any gratitude whatsoever, Sandra. And so what? They're just going to do what they're going to do and tell Russia and China to you know, the devil take the hindmost?
I have no idea. I just think that the Syria is also a much more complicated story than what we're getting.
Oh, without a doubt. Because of the way that they think over there, it just feels like Netanyahu and that crowd are assuming that the world's attention will be diverted by a Syrian civil war, and so that they'll have carte blanche to go and do as they please. Tell me that's not how they think.
Well, Israel, they ain't going to come down from the Golan Heights. That's for damn sure. I'll tell you that.
And the other side, I read some story earlier today pointing out that the Russians have sold to Syria some pretty highfalutin radar, electronic detection technology, etc. And that they've ramped up the crewing and staffing of it, and put all the high tech that they've got into it, so that they'll know almost immediately on a strike being launched on Iran that it's been launched. That's the kind of countermeasure that sort of tells you, if you're plotting that kind of thing, that people are serious about opposing it.
Well, yeah, and it's just, I don't know, I just think that it's, and, you know, with these freaked out born-again people waiting for the world to end, I mean, it's just all, they just probably getting real excited about it, you know, because there's so many ways that it could just turn into some huge regional war, you know? Isn't that what those born-agains are waiting for?
Oh yeah, because that's when by creating that war they compelled Jesus to come down from the clouds, and they get to start slaughtering Jews.
Yeah, so I just, you know, the whole thing. I mean, maybe it's naive for me to, but I really got to just rely on, you know, the power of the executive branch, since they're not the ones really doing the drum beating, at least not overtly like the Bush administration did.
Well, right, and imagine if this was the Bush administration. You know, John, have there been John Bolton porn stash sightings lately? Because, you know, he's kind of a groundhog for these kind of things.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, but you also have Dennis Ross, who's, you know, might as well be a spokesperson for Tel Aviv. I mean, he's an American, but he's even come out saying, no, we shouldn't, there should be no strike against Iran. So I think there's a lot of pushback for it to not happen, but, you know, I don't know. But anyway, the only other thing I wanted to mention was they gave Lenny Dykstra 3 years.
Wow.
For financial fraud. It's like, hello?
And it,
I mean, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, yeah, right. No, I mean, that's not 3 years probation, right?
No, it's 3 years in California prison. It's not, you know, it's fun time. It's not fun time for him, but it's more, I'm just thinking, you know, how dare you put anyone in jail for financial fraud at this point?
Well, that, right, that just kind of, yeah, that doesn't,
I mean, it's just so obnoxious. But
nicked yourself, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was just a mere flesh wound. Aside from that, I was alive and well, and George Will really said that. Although Lottie pointed out to me last night that apparently George Will has two daughters, which is probably why Rush Limbaugh really kind of crossed the line with him. Because,
well, any of us who do have daughters.
Yeah.
You know,
respect women.
The sorry bastard just called them sluts.
Yeah, and I love the Imus quote.
I mean, I'd put a fist in his fat face over it. And I don't fight.
I love the Imus quote especially, too, because, you know, Imus got in trouble for, and the people he said that about were more public figures than the one Limbaugh has been going after since they played in a Division I women's basketball team, and he got the hook real quick over that. And this is even worse than that, especially since, really, I can't believe I'm almost bordering somewhat defending the mumbler, but he said it once. He didn't then go on for a whole week carrying on to the level that Limbaugh has been carrying on about this. I mean, as soon as it came out of his mouth, mumbling it on the air for the few that could understand what he mumbled on WFAN, that was the end right there for him. Limbaugh has just continued to dig a deeper and deeper grave for himself. And someone made a great point in the air. I don't remember who, so unfortunately I can't credit the proper person who said this. But somebody said, yeah, no, Rush Limbaugh isn't losing his First Amendment right to free speech. He used it to say the comment. Now the free market's going to take his job away from him with these sponsors.
Right, because there's nothing in the... I mean, you know, remember, Spike, it's the right wing that says that we have to interpret the Constitution from its original intent in 1787, and, you know, that means you've got to interpret the Constitution in a 1787 world. There was no electricity, there was no mass communication, there was no radio, there was no television, there was no internet. And consequently, Rush Limbaugh does not have a First Amendment right to broadcast. He has a First Amendment right not to have the government interfere. And you know, that's the fundamental failing. Every time one of these stories comes up, somebody goes, oh, he's assaulting his First Amendment rights. Yeah, bull. That's one of those bold blinking, I don't understand basic civics lights. Because the First Amendment applies to government action, whether it be, you know, via the federal government or via extension to the state, county, local localities, blah, 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 blah. You don't have a right. You've got a right not to have the government interfere in your speech. But out in the free market, fair game, baby.
Yeah, that political correctness comes from the free market. It doesn't really come from politics, as the name somewhat implies. Political correctness has come from marketing, which is mostly capitalism. You know, politics use marketing too, but not to the level marketing is used in capitalism. You know, anything that's highly controversial, companies are always going to... most of them that want to stay in business are going to back away from, because they need people from all sorts of backgrounds to spend money. That's what a great example is. The majority of these NASCAR tracks are still stuck in this phase. They think the only people they should target their marketing towards are conservative, white, Christian, Republican. The track here at Pocono, they figured out a long time ago, since they're here in Pennsylvania in the Northeast, if we want to make money, we better not... Now the grandson's in charge. The grandfather was a little bit more polarizing, because he was just, you know, an old guy. Old people are kind of stuck in their ways. You know, I mean, no offense to that, but that's all just kind of...
No, no, it's reality.
He built a solar farm, you know. He's doing things to kind of attract people other than just the stereotypical quote-unquote NASCAR dads, because he needs to put butts in the seats to make a living.
Well, some of that also flows downhill from the attitude of the France family, right?
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, they ain't exactly Adlai Stevenson liberals.
Yeah, especially Bill Francinia, who tried his hardest in the 1960s to prevent Wendell Scott, an African American independent driver who was from Danville, Virginia, which was the final throes of the Confederacy's capital, was the first and really the only African American ever won a NASCAR Cup race. They declared someone else the winner that day, and I believe it was Jacksonville, Florida, a short track. And actually, it was, of all two people, one not really that much of a surprise, Richard Petty, the other Bobby Allison, kind of put up a fight behind the scenes and said to Bill Francinia, yeah, whether you like it or not, he won the race fair and square. Give him the money and the trophy. He earned it. And needless to say, after the race was over, he was awarded the trophy. Bill France Sr. never had the kahunas because he was kind of a very, let's just say, not the nicest guy you could ever do business with to award a black man a trophy he rightfully won in front of a Southern crowd. That's kind of a true story about NASCAR you very, very rarely hear. And also kind of why in Ox Audi, I guess, even though he's a Republican, I always kind of like Richard Petty because, for the most part, he's always been a pretty okay guy compared to some of these other characters in NASCAR history. So but Wendell Scott, the movie Grease Lightning, Richard Pryor was based on him.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And Wendell Scott used to buy, like, the year-old cars from Richard Petty often, so he had cars the same color as Petty. His number was 34 instead of 43. And most of the time it was just him and, like, his two sons were his entire crew. Back in the days where they were, quote, independent guys who were not factory-backed. They were basically racing out of their own pocket. Maybe they'd have a sponsor for a race or two from some local dealerships and things like that. But otherwise, they were just doing it for the love and really not making money. And James Hilton, who's still kicking around the ARCA series, although he's from South Carolina, who I worked for years ago in ARCA, he was like that. You know, there were several guys like that before it became the world of Mitt Romney's friends who are team owners, which was like one of the greatest. Just terrible quotes of all time from a political candidate at a NASCAR race. And, you know, I'm disappointed they didn't boo him as heavily as they would have Michelle Obama. And I wonder if Kurt Busch flipped off Mitt Romney's vehicle like he did the day he had his tantrum at the end of last season to Michelle Obama's SUV. I don't know if people, you know, everyone saw the thing with Jerry Punch on the internet where he belittled him and things like that, which is common behavior with the Busch brothers. But the in-car camera actually showed before he parked the car in the garage that day as he went by Michelle Obama's vehicle, he flipped the bird off to that.
Hey.
Kind of show you just how much class Kurt Busch has, which is why Roger Penske, who, by the way, is no liberal by any means of imagination, just couldn't handle the terrible publicity he was getting from Kurt Busch.
And you know, that's what we're finding out with this whole Limbaugh thing. There is an old adage that there is no such thing as bad publicity, but that saying is taken as a truism, but it may just well be that we're going to find out that there's an exception to the rule.
It's the Trump school, you know. I think he's watched Trump at this point and realized Donald Trump, much like Ann Coulter, just does the most off the wall baloney to get attention. They're like the kids that have a deep-seated desire for attention, will do anything to get attention. And that's the route he's been going lately. You know, I mean, that's why not only did he say those comments, that's why he's just been harping on them harder and harder, because everyone keeps talking about it. It's the Trump school of attention. Only for him, he's going to be on the losing end when it's all said and done, because, you know, I guess for whatever reason, it's actually somewhat harder to knock Trump down for being an idiot than it is going to be for Limbaugh eventually. Plus, I just think some people are getting tired of sucking up to Rush Limbaugh and kissing his big, fat, hairy ass. I really believe.
Oh, Lord, you hope so.
I think there are a few Republicans who are starting to get to the point saying, yeah, I'm tired of having to bow down to this guy. You know, if I'm correct, McCain has steered clear.
But he's one of those people who can say, but, you know, this line, yeah, I did not mean a personal attack on Ms. Fluke. My choice of words was not the best, and in the attempt to be humorous, I created a national stir. I sincerely apologize to Ms. Fluke for the insulting word choices. He did. In other words, that is what that is a non-apology apology.
Right. Yeah, and also, I love that Ass Juice and some of them have come out calling him an entertainer. Entertainer? No, entertainers would be people who actually are they're not being paid by right-wing talking points groups, like the Heritage Group.
But you know what? I do find this interesting for all the Horn family. Welcome to another day ahead of the curve. This just hit over at Think Progress, and they do some good work. Mitt Romney's corporate ties to Limbaugh. This was discussed last Friday. It points out that exactly what I said a few minutes ago. Romney, Bain, Clear Channel, Premier, Limbaugh. And so, therefore, Romney really does have some splaining to do because he's heavily invested by virtue of his retirement package. Jesus, how old is he that he got to retire and makes how many millions of dollars a year? I mean, you want to talk about... No, he's got to answer questions. He's got to answer because he is the reason, in large part, that... that Limbaugh, you know, he and the rest of Bain Capital are why Limbaugh is still on the air. But you want to talk about just offensive, Spike. God almighty. Ann Romney showed up on Radio Rwanda today. And she said, I don't even really consider myself wealthy. Now, they made $20.9 million last year.
I guess because they don't have a giant vault of gold coins to go swimming through like Scrooge McDuck on DuckTales. If she doesn't think that's wealthy, what is her definition of wealthy? I mean, I think even Bill Gates would say, you're wealthy. Okay. Yes, they're not wealthy. Well, then again, that's like Meghan McCain arguing she doesn't understand how people could find that the Romneys are out of touch with normal Americans. Well,
this is the exact quote.
We can be poor in spirit, and I don't even consider myself wealthy, which is an interesting thing. It can be here today and gone tomorrow.
Well, actually, she just accidentally, inadvertently said something very honest. In spirit. They aren't wealthy in spirit. Now, are they, if they're promoting this sort of treatment of females? They're very empty in spirit. I guess they would be in a deficit of good spirit in light of what they're doing. So I guess she accidentally was...
Yeah, was she admitting that they're spiritually dead? It's kind of like what Rush did today. I had a question asking what he said about Sandra Fluke today. Well, he went after her again. And she goes on about this. Basically, he called her a liar. He said that we still don't know who her friends are, these other women, and we don't know what happened to them. Her testimony was hearsay. It was unprovable. Sandra Fluke used them to advance her agenda, which is to force a religious institution to abandon their principles in order to meet hers. You know, there was no apology. None whatsoever.
Apparently he's been spoon-feeding his audience the talking point that she went to a school specifically to force her agenda upon everyone. Yeah, that sounds as logical as the NRA's ridiculous claims of late about Obama's whole plan is not to do anything about guns the first term so he can get reelected.
Right, because, you know, we're all going to be gun-free in the next, you know, 5 years from now. Right? The other important thing that Flush did say today that is so daggum telling, Spike, is this. He basically admitted the truth, not that he knew that he was, he admitted the truth of the way that I've been describing for-profit broadcasting for a long time. David in Tennessee was telling me, paraphrasing what he said, it was this, my friends, let's tidy up a bit from that business last week. The libs are going on about some sponsors taking themselves away from your awareness. They will regret that decision. They have been paid handsomely by you, my audience. They don't have you now. I do not care about them. I do this show for you, my audience. Those sponsors don't care about me. They care about the access I give them to you. You are the reason I do this. And see, that is absolute confirmation of what the way I've described it in the past, because it doesn't matter what the content is. For-profit broadcasting is designed to deliver listeners... potential customers to businesses. And whatever happens in the middle is just dross but the thing is, the people who are advertising on Limbaugh, I mean, Jesus, LifeLock, really?
Well, I've always questioned that company.
You know, buy gold coins. And anybody like Sears Kmart or Allstate or, some of those other more so-called mainstream businesses, they find out that they're on limbo and go, Jesus Christ, get us off of there.
Yeah. Or even Pro Flowers, who sponsors like every terrestrial political talk show, period, including, you'll hear them all the time with plugs on Schultz and Hartman as well. They just saturate every political talk show, has, quote, suspended, which is really them riding out to see, okay, let's see, is he going to fall further down or maybe could we go back? Although I found it interesting, someone I know who signed a petition to them actually got an email, a form email, but an email back explaining what they're doing right now, which means, yeah, Pro Flowers, even though really that's not really a company you want to do business with anyways, when there's plenty of local florists who can deliver you a better deal.
Yeah, amen.
But in the same, that's them even saying, yeah, we hear you. you know, for them to send you a form email, that means that they're in crisis control right now, trying to figure out which way to go. I mean, and obviously, you know, a lot of people are, obviously, since they're more conservative talk radio on terrestrial radio than liberal talk radio, a lot of people might just assume they have some conservative push that they're on these shows. But I can't tell you for how many years when I used to still listen to the liberal or the Democratic Limbaugh and then also Hartman hearing them doing plugs for Pro Flowers on their show. But that, I mean, I think that's one of that's one of the worst ones to pull on him because they put money in every political talk show on terrestrial radio.
Right. They've got a market that's in the car listening to political radio, and they don't care whether it's right wing or left. It's just that Al there's Franken a hell of a lot more right than left.
Yeah. I mean, Al Franken used to do plugs for them too. So obviously, for them to be pulling from the quote unquote biggest of all political talk shows, which is huge. Although his ratings have always been malarkey, especially back in the day when they had the old rating system, and he was only 2 to 3.
Yeah, he'd claim 20 million listeners a week, but that's the same 4 million 5 times a week, and
right.
It's actually considerably less than that.
And in the same, he was on 600-something stations when Stern was on 30, and he was just barely ahead of Stern, which should say a lot right there, because he's on midday. That's actually not a good time for terrestrial radio. The drive times, morning and afternoon drives, which in reality would mean technically Sean Hannity probably has a bigger audience. Sad day for Rush. those are the better times to have a talk show on radio when you have a captive audience and traffic in your major metropolitan area. And now the new system they have, which is more like the Nielsen's rating box kind of system, which is much more accurate, and his numbers have really gone into decline with this new system, is really funny because it's still somewhat questionable maybe just how good his ratings are. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but on their TV show over at Current, Cenk Uygur has actually put out a $10,000 challenge to Limbaugh to prove his ratings are as good as he claims. He says if he can prove those ratings are as good as he claims, he'll pay Limbaugh $10,000, which is really Cenk more or less saying, yeah, I'm putting $10,000 on the line because I know I'm not going to have to pay up because I know he's full of it. So the dirty secret's starting also to get a little bit more and more uncovered that, you know, Limbaugh's numbers have been seriously fudged and fabricated for quite some time. He is, if you just do the...
And if that's the case, Spike, then the more likely it is that he will be easier to ditch. I do have to roll along. I want to hit some more blinking lights before we go. But it's awful good to hear from you, brother. And thanks for being. I found out too late that you were on hold on Friday night. I'm sorry you had to wait, brother.
That's all right. There was actually a caller who hadn't been on for some time who probably provided better commentary. Anyways, I just like to say if people want to have fun with numbers, go look up the number of affiliates Limbaugh is on. Go get his ratings. Do an average, and then realize just how bad he is in most markets.
Well, and that's borne out by the fact that stations, they're making money from stations paying to have him. They abandoned the full barter method a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Spike, take care, brother.
Later.
Bye now. Yeah, understand. That's all. The whole ratings thing is an imprecise little bit of statistical wishful thinking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob?
Yes.
Hi. Haven't called in a while. This is Ken. Last time I called, it was October 2008.
Well, it has been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I really appreciate the horn. It's a great, great communication, progressive outlet, you know, because we're losing a lot of progressive outlets.